Broken Spirits, Part 1.
I don't know if I'm alone on this, but the older I get, I find it harder to know if some of my memories are misremembered or being forgotten. It could be age. It could be a side effect of being a busy single mom with a 4-year-old daughter. When I was younger and I would act up, my mother would always say, "Just wait. One day you're gonna have a daughter just like you." I really hope not. I was bad as a kid. But not so terrible that I would have ended up on a Dr. Phil episode as a troubled child. My high school years, though, almost every teenager works hard at looking like they don't care. Almost as hard as they work at having a great victim story. It's not enough to be aloof. For a teenager, social life is a constant poker game, but you want to have a terrible hand. Honestly, growing up, I didn't have a tough life at all. I wasn't the best student or the worst. Steady C student. I wasn't the most popular or the most bullied or the outsider or the pick me. I strived to be as detached as possible. I was secretly proud to have never signed a yearbook. I could always sense when an acquaintance was about to hand me their yearbook, and it was like a little game I'd play to see how I could avoid it. I felt like I was so good at reading people. Well, as if teenagers are that hard to read. It didn't take an A student to know who was the typical high school stereotype. One thing I never took into account, how the people around me saw me. Well, one day I found out. Senior year, school picture day, I actually dressed up for this one. I prided myself on having perfected the Mona Lisa smile. Is she? Isn't she? As I sat down to have my picture taken, Brian Kindler, an effeminate smartass, who was always grouped with me because our last name started with the same letter, said, "Why waste memory? You literally could use the same photo every year. Oh, look at me. Aren't I so good at brooding? My quirk is being vanilla." Not the worst thing that I would ever had said to me, but at the time, at the fact that everyone laughed, someone else said, "Look, America's next not model." It was like everyone was happy to finally get one over me. And what did I do? Nothing. I stayed emotionless. But my brain was already trying to think of the best way to ruin Brian's life. Brian's role in school, the snarky one. That was his role since middle school. He was quick to point out your most embarrassing flaw. Everyone just acted like he was funny, hoping to avoid his targeted spotlight. Brian was in basketball from middle school through sophomore year. That worked in his favor, even though he had quit. No one knew the exact reason why he quit. No one knew if he was just tired of it or if he was asked to quit. And it was in that mystery that I found an easy hole in his armor. One rumor is all I would need. If everyone was waiting to get one over on me, they were starving to get Brian. In middle school, he was less refined in his biting wit. His hallway critiques were duller, but he knew his pre-adolescent audience. Calling any male student gay was enough for the preteens, and Brian did this endlessly from 6th to 8th grade. Female students got harsher critiques. Preteen girls have more points of weakness. A bully could focus on a girl's looks, or their social awkwardness, or their family life, or all of it, which is what Brian did to one girl named Jackie. Looking back at middle school as an adult, especially as a parent, you realize that no child at that moment of their life have much choice in how they present themselves. Middle schoolers are still children. They typically don't buy their own clothes. They typically don't have a strong voice in social situations. They typically don't have a belief system independent of their parents. They also typically don't understand any of this. There wasn't anything wrong with Jackie. It was obvious her mother dressed her and that her mother still saw her as a little girl. She could be seen as a little chubby, but she came from a tall family. I'm sure she was one summer away from the growth spurt she probably felt was not happening soon enough. She was quiet. When she spoke, it was soft with a hint of uncertainty. She was very smart, but she didn't want to be the first to answer. I don't know if I'm any kind of expert to comment on the unspoken jealousy that the smart, quiet kid gets throughout their school life, being pressured to allow other students to cheat off of you, receiving no actual thanks for putting yourself out there, hoping that someone might call you a friend for it. Jackie was just a smart, sweet little girl. The only thing that was her problem, her last name, Kastner, because that put her constantly in the same name group as Brian. Jackie Kastner, Brian Kindler. Any school field trip, any assembly, any lunch period, she was never too far from Brian's bored, mean mind. At first, it was just insults about her clothes. Brian would always pull at her labels and announce the clothing brand, as if we knew anything about clothing brands in middle school. It didn't matter. The intent was to make her seem poor. They shared a few classes. He always sat behind her. When she would finally get the courage to answer for the class, he would whisper snide remarks about her being a nerd. Thank God some of the teachers could see Jackie's posture deflate and know there was an unspoken issue. Our math teacher tried to fix this by moving Brian to another part of the room. That ended up being worse for Jackie. Brian had now been punished in some way because of her, so he got meaner. He nicknamed her Jackie Trashner. If she happened to walk by Brian in a hallway, he would always announce that someone needed to take out the trash. He would block her path and mime being a garbage truck picking up a trash can. In class, he would crumple up paper, wait for the teacher to be distracted, and throw it at Jackie's head. "Oh, sorry, Jackie, I was aiming for the trash can." Then he got others to do the same. I'm sure Jackie feared telling any adult about this bullying. I don't know exactly how it became known, but Jackie's father and mother were getting divorced. Brian treated this like news of the century. We're actually gonna see her clothes get worse. Somehow Jackie, she got more quiet. She even stopped answering in class. The worst part of it, no one came to her defense. I mean, we're all kids. This just felt like it was the way life was. Eighth grade was no place for heroes. Brian made it his mission to tear Jackie down each day, and each day Jackie would be a little less. I'm tearing up just thinking of this little girl feeling so alone in a building filled with the only people she had ever known in her whole life. And none of us tried to help her. Eighth grade picture day is a memory that sticks. Jackie looked really nice. She smiled for her picture. That memory has stuck with me longer than some relationships. It was the only smile I'd seen on her. Jackie was a very pretty little girl who deserved better. The last time I saw Jackie was the Friday before spring break. She was late to every class that Friday. She was walking really slow, as if to just get through the day with no problems. She sat so still in her desk. I would swear to you that it looked like she wasn't even breathing. It was like she just tried to make as little movement as possible in hopes of being left alone. But being left alone is just not happening in middle school. Someone had thrown a crumpled paper ball at her head. It got no reaction from her. The final bell rang and school was out. I didn't even see Jackie leave the campus. She must have hidden until everyone was gone so she just could have had the hallways to herself. When we all came back from spring break, her desk stayed empty. But no one knew where she was. No teacher spoke about it. I guess it wasn't like a bunch of kids needed to know exactly what happened to their classmate if they hadn't seen it happen. At first, the rumors began flying. But after a week or two, with no hints, the rumors became a dull topic. Honestly, we didn't deserve to know what happened to Jackie Kastner. There was only one person that became obsessed with finding out. Brian. He wanted one last cheap thrill at her expense. He went to her house. There was a for sale sign, so he went to the neighbor's house. He came back to school gleaming with an aura of dangerous light. He let everyone know he knew what happened to Jackie Trashner, and he decided that during lunch, only a group of his choosing would find out first. It's sick to think of all the students that begged to be in that chosen group. Some of them even paid Brian to get into that group. The lunch bell rang. Brian took his chosen group to a side of the school where it was far enough away that no one could hear him, but everyone could see him. And he gave them the entire story, punctuating each detail between bites of his lunch. Brian was quite theatrical. He was giddy with the attention he was commanding. Brian laid out Jackie's story like a dark stand-up routine. He was telling her story like it was a joke, so they all laughed like it was a joke. Please remember, all the people in the group were basically children, so they didn't know how to react to what they were being told. Jackie killed herself over spring break. Her parents blamed themselves. The house was completely empty by the time the realtor came up to put the for sale sign. When the yearbooks were finally given out, Jackie's picture wasn't even included in it. It was like she simply didn't exist anymore. I heard that in some of Brian's friends' yearbooks, he had gone to where her picture would have been and wrote in R.I.P. Jackie Trashner. Now, I'm not going to claim that my revenge was to avenge Jackie. That's giving me too much credit. But Jackie's story was part of the fuel in my eventual fire. Brian needed to hurt, and I wanted to be the one to hurt him.
Welcome to the True Scary Stories with Edie and Nick podcast. This is the podcast where two stand-up comedians read spooky stories submitted to us by our fans, the Uglies. Hey, Uglies, what's up? Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. And for everybody who is not from America, hope you had a great
weekend.
Winter.
Winter beginning.
Or no, I guess they would be in a different place.
A great bringing of the new season.
I hope you had a great
bringing of the new month.
Okay, yeah. I hope you had a great bringing of the new month. I love this story because I actually identify with a lot with this. Oh, and by the way, this is a podcast that has some commentary. It's not crazy, so don't act like it's crazy, okay? There's a little bit, but if you don't like that, check out our Just the Terror episodes. Anywho, my mom used to always say to me also, you're going to have a daughter one day who's going to be just like you.
Yeah, you say that.
You have said that before. And did I?
No, you haven't.
No. And I'm like, can I not get pregnant?
No.
Because I'm like, wait a second. Shouldn't I have had that little rascally kid by now?
Oh, man.
I've never been pregnant. So I'm like,
It's a common thing that moms say to people.
I remember my mom saying that and me being like, no, because I'm never going to have a kid. And maybe I willed it out of me because I've never even really thought I was pregnant, really.
I think it was in a mom handbook.
It was.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know because I have not been. And then the way she said, not like one of the kids on Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
Without knowing, Dr. Phil is like the show I fall asleep to every night for like the last 5 years. I watch Dr. Phil to fall asleep. It doesn't matter how I make a pancake. It's got two sides.
There you go.
I'm just a country boy from Texas.
You really sound like Dr. Phil. You're very good
at
that.
I love Dr. Phil. Okay, what do you think?
I think it's, I think we've all seen this. I remember in my middle school, there was a little girl named Jackie that people were really mean to. My sister ended up standing up for her because they were just mean to her for no reason. And you never know why people are mean to some of the kids because it doesn't make sense when you kind of grow past it. You're like, why is everybody? That happened to me, actually. When I first started middle school, there was two people that were determined to bully me. And then one day, one of them just told the other, what are we doing? And then just stopped.
That's kind of like what I imagine the war, if there was a war between England. If there's a war between us in the USA and Russia, that I would just like message them on Facebook and be like, hey guys, like,
what are you doing?
Do you guys want a war? Because I don't want a war with you. What are you going to wear to the war?
Yeah, so that's kind of, I think we've all had these kind of stories floating in our existence.
Yep. All right, let's keep going. Broken Spirits, Part 2.
I don't know if I'm alone on this, but the older I get, I find that some of my similar memories are just grouped together. Starting when I was little, my father would play poker with me from time to time. I can't remember any individual game, I just remember that I never beat him. I hated that. One time I fake cried, asking him why he would just let me just win one hand. He said with a chuckle, because the real thrill of winning in poker is seeing your opponent go from extremely confident to absolutely defeated. I could let you win, but my face wouldn't show it. I want you to feel a real win by breaking my spirit. As a parent now, wow. That sounds absolutely awful to teach a child. But I'm sure my dad was just attempting to be a cool dad. The biggest lesson trick he taught me, in poker, you don't want to be easy to read. After Brian's little insult for 2 days, all I could think of was how to get my revenge on him. I'd never experienced this type of focus in my life. Life was muted around me. I wanted to cut him deep. I can't tell you if I was smart or evil, but I knew where I had to start. With the biggest questions my peers had of Brian. Gossip is currency in the life of the average and mundane. People love trading tall tales and what ifs. All I had to do was use Brian's favorite middle school insult against him. It only takes three objects to make a constellation. It takes even less to start a rumor. To make this stick, I needed two moves. I needed to fire up the curiosity until it was glowing, then solidify the new truth with one simple devastating strike. After that, sit back and watch your opponent's spirit break. I figured out the first move quickly. A note dropped near Brian's locker. It had to be easy to spot but feel like it wasn't meant to be found. I wrote a note in my best boy's handwriting that simply said, Brian, no matter what, I'll still be yours. Simple. any more words and it would definitely seem as if a teenage girl wrote it. Lucky for me, Brian's locker was right next to one of the biggest gossipers in the whole school, Candace Stevenson. She was popular adjacent. Never would be homecoming queen, but shops with her. Starting a rumor through her was easier than free lunch. It's funny how, by the last 2 years of high school, everyone has officially perfected their social talent. The nerdy guy who was kind of funny is now the funniest guy in school. The wannabe socialite whose parents always went out of town for weekends would throw the biggest rager of the 4 years. The valedictorian knows exactly who to pick for a group project. Candace immediately spotted the dropped note and opened it up without a second thought. Crazy thing, I was no more than 7 feet away watching it. I perfected being detached. I could hide in plain sight. I watched Candace do what she does best. She wasn't theatrical like Brian. She knew the best rumors were started as secrets between two friends. Secrets that involved neither of them. She didn't tell the homecoming queen. That would be obvious desperation. She chose someone that wanted her attention. If it wasn't so toxic, it was impressive to see her hold on to the new gossip for exactly the right time. She waited until everyone was leaving school for the day. She let it simmer in the crockpot of a teenager's mind. The following days were telling, if only you were looking for it. The rumor didn't spread immediately, but I watched the new gestures happening behind Brian's back. I saw his buddies shorten their conversations, punctuating it with an elbow bump. This is when I struck. I got a thick Sharpie and wrote gay in big letters on Brian's locker. Even when the janitor painted over it, it was still there. Call it karma. This happened 1 week before spring break. Even the people that didn't want to share in the gossip would comment things like, "Makes sense, usually bullies are projecting." It didn't matter that no one could figure out who the secret admirer was. Everyone had been waiting for Brian to get his since middle school. The Friday before the break, Brian avoided his locker entirely. I even heard that someone crumpled up some paper and threw it at his head. But that was just a rumor, so don't quote me. The last bell rang, the buses filled up, the students' parking lot emptied. Well, except for one car. One car was there when the school seemed its most silent. I knew who it was. I watched as a deflated Brian slowly walked out to his car, carrying nothing but a broken spirit. My dad was right, it was a real thrill. Now, the next part, well, it wasn't my fault. The week passed, everyone came back, some with a new tan, some with a new hairstyle, some wearing a concert t-shirt, showing off what they did over the week without saying anything. Brian's designated parking space was empty when the first bell rang. His desk was empty for each class. His locker was opened by a security guard and emptied of its contents. The rumors went flying at the last part of the day, but the next day carried on, and the day following, and everyone just settled into what they needed to do to close out their high school career on the strongest note possible. No one ever found out what happened to Brian. You need another Brian to do that, or maybe no one cared. The yearbooks came out. Brian's picture was not included. Back then, I wish I would have bought one. I'm glad I didn't. I don't need a morbid souvenir of my teenage years. But I finally did sign one yearbook. I can't recall who the lucky person was. I do recall they were patient as I flipped through the pages to find the page that Brian should have been on. I wrote R.I.P. Brian. I regret I didn't have a nickname for him. Graduation happened, hugs were given, joyful tears were shed. We were now all moving on with the accomplishments of public education under our belts. But I left with more than a diploma. I left with knowing the thrill of breaking someone's spirit. And I needed to do it again.
All right, so I really didn't get this one. I'm not going to lie to you.
What do you mean?
I mean, I get that the girl or whatever passed on, but I didn't really get the rest of it.
So, back in middle school, Jackie passed away, or passed on because of Brian's bullying.
Yes.
So, in this one, Brian made fun of our main antagonist.
Oh, okay. I get that part.
So, she said she wanted revenge, so she started a rumor that he was gay, which is what everybody was wondering.
Dang. Do you remember when, like, being purple meant you were gay?
Yeah.
Nobody remembers that but me and you. Okay, because
yeah,
I remember.
Easy. Well, it was a Teletubby, too. They all thought that.
Okay, it was something to do with the Teletubby.
Yeah.
But I remember I had a shirt that was, like, shaking the it was some Jesus shirt. It was like shaking the promise of Christ or something like that. It was like a purple shirt with like gooey green letters.
Okay.
You know, very 90s, and there's like two fists like shaking whatever. It was something about Jesus. And I was like, ooh, this shirt's purple. And they're like, yeah, that must mean you're gay. You're wearing purple. And I was like, it's literally a shirt about Jesus.
Yeah.
But I remember being ridiculed for wearing a purple shirt because purple was considered gay.
I mean, if I were to pontificate, I think it stems from the hatred of Barney.
Because
Barney was purple.
He was purple.
You know, and then if you liked Barney in middle school, oh, you're a baby.
Well,
you like Barney
in middle school.
And then it grew up to like the Teletubby. Oh, there's a purple one. So it just all
right.
Kind
and
of...
they thought that the purple Teletubby was gay because it had a purse. And
yeah.
like they none of them have any kind of private parts. So there's like no male yeah. Teletubbies and there's no female Teletubbies.
So it just ran
They're
with them.
They're all just Teletubbies.
They're all just Teletubbies. They're all just happy to run around hills.
I remember that my mom was like, you can't watch Teletubbies because yeah. one of them had a purse. And we were really religious, but none of them are boy or girl. They're
yeah.
all like not have they
They're
have less
tubbies.
They have less privates than Barbies.
Yeah, yeah.
Do. So
yeah, you're right. You're
some
right.
of them had lighter voices or whatever, but like
I think people just wanted there to be something wrong.
I would,
especially with children's programming. They
I would
wanted
rather
that.
Okay. I would think rather than one of them being gay or whatever. I think like the real problem with Teletubbies was something like MK Ultra. Like there, it was like way too weird just to be like
that
a
too.
Kid show.
They thought it was.
I
very
think people
weird.
Had a natural like
fear
of Teletubbies, and they couldn't understand why. I think it's like some kind of like experiment, like government experiment. So then, when the one had a purse, they were like, "Oh, that's why
we found the reason.
This
yeah,
is why this.
That's how. That's
but
typically
honestly,
how easy how it started.
What
goes.
It was is it was uncomfortable, and it was we all signaled in our head like this is weird and this is wrong. But we couldn't figure out why because they don't really speak English. They don't really do anything. But we all had got the gut feeling like this is like a government experiment or this is like brainwashing or something like that. We all knew that. So then when that simple thing happened, I don't think like really people were like, oh, that's a male Teletubby and a person. I think we were all just looking for a reason to be like,
yeah.
explain why we were like, oh, this is like a government experiment. Yeah. Like, this what? Is like brainwashing.
What if it was the first episode, which they never showed again, the pilot episode where they like, had an adult Teletubby in a spaceship and they shot it off to the happy baby son.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so this is what if they like the end of it, they're like, okay, so this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna make them think it's a children's show. Like the last episode.
Yeah.
And look how stupid they are. They're
yeah,
gonna believe
stupid
it,
they
okay?
are.
And they're gonna let us get to probably like 5 seasons, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's like the end and it's like, you guys, this was a joke the whole time, you idiots!
Idiots!
All right, let's keep going. Broken Spirits, Part 3.
I don't know if I'm alone on this, but the older I get, the more I reflect on choices I made, the harder it is to imagine why. No one will tell you that regret arrives when it wants to, and sometimes it arrives when you can't do anything to change the choices you made. My early adulthood was a mixed bag of reluctance to start anything and a temporary acceptance that I was exactly who I wanted to be. I guess you could label me a slacker. That's only if you consider a resume an index of an accomplished life. I did many things, but they were just for me. I excelled at being selfish. Other than high or violent crimes, I enjoyed getting away with whatever I could. I enjoyed getting over on anyone I could. I don't want to publicly put all this out, but I know that I was chasing that thrill. I never found a reason to break a person's spirit, mostly because I had to get to know everyone that I had to be around. It was easier to be hidden in high school because the purpose was to graduate. As an adult, purpose is a little harder to find. So existing now consisted of collecting acquaintances and having half relationships. Breaking someone's heart isn't fulfilling. It felt disgusting to me to see them beg to come back. It was terrible, and yet they wanted more, even the ones I cheated on. I'm sure that made even your blood boil. It's crazy how people can watch murder shows. They can hear stories of people being dismembered, eaten, but hurting animals and cheating are the most despicable. Don't worry, no animals were harmed in my life. And I looked at it as I was making that person stronger. I told you, I excelled at being selfish. I was still living at home during this time. I saw the neighborhood change a little. A few neighbors who had kids my age that did leave the house and go after life came out of their house a little less. A for sale sign went up at another. I found a dive bar I enjoyed, The Wrench. A good dive bar is supposed to make you feel like you're outside of society, like you're in a different world than the world itself. It should also offer free chili on Tuesdays and poker nights on Wednesday. The best part of a dive bar, it ain't for everyone. I was the youngest at the dive bar, 24. And although the male patrons and a couple of female ones would have had me if I let them, I never dated, hooked up, had a fling with anyone there. Dive bars deal with drama by shutting a person out. At least that's my perception. My weekends consisted of me going to a trendy bar for the start of the night, finagle a few drinks out of dorky men, then cap off the night with a couple of drinks at the wrench. I gained the respect of the older patrons at the wrench by beating them all in poker. But after doing that a few times, I stopped playing. What's the point of breaking spirits of broken spirits? One Wednesday night in April, a couple walked in. They were mid to late 20s, if I had to take a guess. They both had wedding rings on. But the way they were acting, it was obvious they are married to each other. The man knew her drink. She had her hand on his lower back. Not only were they married to each other, they were in love. Why a married couple would go into a dive bar is beyond me. I overheard the man ask about poker night. The bartender, Mike, pointed them over to the game in session. The local patrons even pulled a couple of chairs for them. Traitors. And this might be the part of the whole story you won't believe. They both sat down and both played. Husband and wife, poker players. I was transfixed. They quickly made friends around the table. Charles and Hannah. They just moved here. Nightingale Avenue. My street. They had a 5-year-old daughter that is staying at her grandmother's until everything's moved into the house. They were enjoying the peace while they have it. Cute. The conversation continued. They play a few hands. They were decent. I called it a night before they left. They left the bar about an hour after me. How do I know? I saw them come home from my window. They giggled as they walked into their new home. They seemed so happy, and something in me despised that. I couldn't stop watching them when I was home. I saw the moving trucks come and go. I saw their little girl finally arrive, dropped off by one of their parents. It was hard to tell. They all seemed happily equally. I never hugged my parents like that. Everything across the street from me was a bizarre mirror world of mine. The houses were the same, but their lives were so much better. I realize now that if I had just attempted to do anything with my life, maybe moved, maybe gone to college, at least gotten a job, then I probably wouldn't have felt the way I was feeling. I felt something in me that was probably already there, but I didn't have the word for it. I mean, I didn't recognize the feeling before. Envy. It was familiar, but it was stronger than ever. And without trying, my brain began spouting ideas of how to break their spirits. I tried to shush the thoughts for a few days. I really didn't want to, right? Right? I'm going to spare you all the extended details. I followed Hannah whenever I had the chance. She was quick to make friends. She even made friends with Candace Stevenson, who had become quite the housewife. They enjoyed Sunday brunch and bottomless mimosas, even though Hannah only had 1.5. Hannah became an administrative assistant at a local realtor's office. The only thing I never saw them do, go to church, which was pretty cool to me. Charles was a young gun in the city developer's office. I'm guessing planning or something. I couldn't get close. He worked for the city. They hosted a dinner party pretty quickly. The guests were a mix of people that worked for the city, people that worked at the realtor's office, and Candace. Two lovebirds making quite the comfortable nest. And here I was, across the street, becoming a lame duck. I had no plan for life. So I did the first thing that popped in my head. I snuck into their house one night after all the lights went off. It was pretty easy. Their house was exactly like mine. Guest bathroom was far enough from the master bathroom to bedroom to make for a quiet entrance. The main AC unit was right outside of that. It was like the local realtor designed all the houses to be broken into. They had no alarm. What sweet-hearted people. I could hear them sleepy, both barely snoring. It was also cute. I walked through their living room. It was like an exhibit on a perfect marriage. They even went to their prom together. Looks like they got married not too long after high school, and not too long after that, then comes baby in a baby carriage. I had enough and was about to make my quiet escape when I heard a little voice call out. Hello? Darn, did I wake up the little girl? Her room was exactly where my first bedroom was. I was surprised these perfect parents didn't put her in a room near theirs. Thinking back on what I did, I can't believe I even thought it was a good choice. I slowly walked into the little girl's room and greeted her, quietly. Hello? Are you Mama's friend? No, I am someone who once lived in the house. What's your name? Lily. Hi, Lily, I'm Belinda. You used to live here? A long time ago. Way before most of these houses were built. Are you really old? Oh, I don't age anymore. I don't know what that means. Don't worry, Lily. Just know that I'm here to make sure everything stays the same. Are you an angel? No, I'm just someone who keeps everything staying the same. You are such a bright little girl. Now you must go back to sleep. Are you gonna stay here? No, I'm leaving for now. But if you want me to, I can come back every now and then. To talk? Yes, to talk. And check up on you. Promise me you'll go back to sleep. Close your eyes. And when you feel like opening them, close them a little longer. I'll be gone by the time you wake up, Lily. I promise to sleep. Thank you, Lily. Can I tell Mommy and Daddy about you? I wish I would have taken more time to have thought this answer out than I did. Feel free to, Lily. Now close your eyes. With that, she laid back down and closed her eyes. I slowly backed out of the room, not knowing how much time I had. As soon as I got out of the house, I felt that little bit of thrill. I decided that I will begin to haunt that house.
I was gonna say, I was like, is she a ghost? Like, at the end of this, are we gonna find out she was a ghost the whole time?
No, she's a person.
Oh, but it kind of sounded like she was a ghost.
No, she's, when she said at the beginning, she's a single mom now with a 4-year-old
kid. Right,
right,
so I understand that, yeah. And she broke it, she did a B&E.
Did sound like she was a ghost.
Bacon and eggs, she did a B&E, breaking and entering.
Yes.
Do you want to go do a bacon and eggs?
I think that's what she's trying to make it sound like.
Yeah. I was trying to be like, Dinko.
Or an imaginary friend. Yeah, I know what you're, B&E.
A B&E, and I'm not talking about bacon and eggs. Okay, yeah. So then at the end I got a little scared if she actually was a ghost, but she is a human who just broke into these people's houses, which
yes.
is really messed up.
And talked to their daughter.
And then she broke into their houses, but she's like, oh, they didn't even put the kid next to their room. Like, she's judging their choices.
That's funny. That's
like,
funny.
You just
that.
Broke into their house. Like,
oh, but they...
Oh my goodness! If I was like a crazy person,
I could have taken this kid.
This kid. Yeah, you are a crazy person. You're broken into their house.
Yeah.
I can't believe they just like let people break into their house.
That's
crazy. I don't know if she has the place to be judgmental, but it sounded like at the end of this she was going to be a ghost or something like that, or like a feminine Santa Claus. Like, I feel like that's what Santa would say. Like, close your eyes, and then when you want to wake up, close them a little bit more.
That's hilarious. Yes, the Santa Claus for the other days of the year.
Yeah, just a B&E, a person
just,
breaking and entering.
Just breaking and entering.
Is it Santa, or is it a
Santa
breaking
doesn't
and entering?
Watch you all the time, it's this person.
No, he sees you all the time.
Well, he has his scouts.
He has his scouts for our criminals that break into your house. That might possibly be ghosts, because obviously she's going to try to, the kid's going to try to explain this to her parents, and they're going to be so scared.
Yeah.
And then she also said, why is my room so far from you?
isn't this weird that
isn't
my parents...
Isn't that weird? That Lily's like, that's so weird.
It's so weird, Lily.
I would never do that. I'm just so much better than that. I would have my kids, you know. I mean, if you're going to be perfect, I would do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to break into your... Okay, let's keep going. Broken Spirits, Part 4.
I don't know if I'm alone on this, but I've always been surprised on how on schedule most people can really be. My plan to haunt the new neighbors went better than I imagined. They fell asleep at almost always the same time. I guess that's what having regular jobs will do to people. The amount of times I went over to their house at night is perplexing to me now. My first time since deciding to haunt the house, I went over and opened their kitchen cabinets. I stopped by Lily's room. She was fast asleep, so I left her as such. The next time, I moved little things around. I didn't hide them, just put them in an obvious different place. I heard her little voice. Hello? I peeked in and saw that she was sort of waiting for me. Hi, Belinda. Hi, Lily. I asked her all about her day. She's 5, so it was a short chat. Then I made her promise to fall asleep again. I did this for a couple of more days, snuck in the house, made my next haunting move, talked to Lily, snuck out. I stopped for a week after that. No reason other than I wanted a drink and I didn't want to go into Lily's room any kind of tipsy. I'm not an animal. I felt like I should make a big move on the following Tuesday, hoping that Charles and Hannah might pop by poker night. That Tuesday night, I went in. The cabinets had little straps to keep them closed. This made me giggle. Of course, I opened them again. I decided to take some of their photos down in retaliation. Then, the little, hello? Hi, Lily. Hi, Belinda. Where were you? Oh, I had to visit my other world, make sure things were in order. Another world? Is it pretty? It's beautiful, Lily. And we would make you an instant princess if you went there. Oh, I don't know. I don't like being away from my mommy and daddy. They told me you were imaginary. Oh, I'm very real. They just wouldn't be able to see me. Did you tell them that I used to live here? They said they bought the house from the people that lived here before. Oh, those people lived here way after I did, Lily. Then I heard a female's voice, Lily? Followed by footsteps coming down the hallway. I hoped that the house was identical and the closet had that extra space that I had. I got into the closet. It did. Phew! Not a second later, Hannah peeked into the room. I decided to stay ahead by not even attempting to peek. Hannah said, Lily, why are you awake? Were you talking to someone, honey? Belinda. Oh, the little girl who used to live here before us? She's not little, she's old. That's right. Where is she? She said you can't see her. Ah. Well, I hope she can hear me. Belinda, will you please, 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 please let little Lily sleep? She has a big day tomorrow. We all stayed silent for a minute. Hannah said, well, I guess she's gone for now, Lily, so close your eyes. Then Lily interrupted, and when I feel like opening them, close them a little longer. Hannah, surprised, you're such a smart little girl. Good night, Lily. Good night, Mommy. I heard Hannah walk back down the hallway. I heard Lily say, good night, Belinda. I stayed in the closet longer than usual. I should have used this time to reflect on what I was doing, but instead I congratulated myself. She repeated something I taught her. The next night, Wednesday, poker night, I ordered a ginger ale. I wanted to stay sober in case I needed to go haunting again. I was anticipating the happy couple coming through. The hours passed, last call. They didn't show up. Of course they didn't. They were only here that other time because Lily was at her grandma's. I felt stupid for not remembering that. I decided to order my only drink of the night. My mind was racing with thoughts of self-hate, envy, depression, but no regret. I had to amp my thrill up. I wasn't just happy with haunting their house. I wanted to see if I could break their spirits. I don't even know why. It was just obsession. That night, I had trouble sleeping. No matter how much I kept my eyes closed, I could not convince my brain to stop thinking. What will make me happy? What will stop this envy? At around 4 a.m., I popped out of my bed and had my answer. I said out loud, I'm going to ruin their marriage. I quickly started pacing my room. Why did I think haunting a place was enough? Who cares about ghosts? They really can't hurt you. Moving things around? I didn't even get to see them look confused. I didn't get that thrill by haunting Brian Kindler. No, I got it by ruining his life. And call me cheap, but I knew the best way to put a wedge in between this happy couple. I was going to make Hannah think Charles was having an affair. Why wouldn't he? New guy in town, working with the city, plenty of women running around those offices. I'm sure not all of them have met Hannah. Let's see how much she trusts her husband. If she's truly a happy wife, then she'll never blink an eye. She'll write off a fake affair easily. But if she begins to question his loyalty, well, isn't that more of a sign of who she really was in the first place? He is a really good guy. She shouldn't doubt him. So, it's more of a test on her. I couldn't leave a note like the last time. That's child's play, but something definitely needs to be found. Finally, at 5 a.m., I had the bones of a plan. I fell asleep immediately. I woke up at 11 a.m. precisely. That day went by quicker than I thought, yet the night took so long. I waited for all the lights in their house to turn off. That was my cue. I snuck over. Thanks to all my previous visits, I knew one major thing. Charles kept his wallet in the kitchen. I took a credit card. He had three, so even if one came up missing, he wasn't without. I opened the cabinets, moved some things around. Now he would think the ghost or Lily's imaginary friend took it. My plan was to do just that and leave. Then I heard her little voice. Hello? I couldn't just leave her without saying hello. If she wakes her parents up, they might discover everything too soon. Then Hannah would know that Charles was missing a credit card. I peeked into Lily's room. I whispered, hello, Lily. Hello, Belinda. Why are you whispering? I almost lost my voice today, Lily. I was singing so many songs in my other world. I sang a song about you. Lily whispered, can I hear it? Of course. At night, our princess will come. She'll sing a pretty song. Her voice will warm the coldest of hearts who can't help but sing along. At night, our princess will come. She'll sing a pretty song. She'll watch over us and keep us safe while she rights every wrong. I was very impressed with myself on coming up with something so quick. Then I said, so now close your eyes, Lily. Lily replied, and when I feel like opening them, close them a little longer. Good night, Lily. Good night, Belinda. I'm glad you came to see me. I slipped back out of her room and made my way to my usual escape. Right when I got into the bathroom, I heard footsteps coming down the hallway. I stopped dead in my tracks and didn't move another inch. They were light, so my gut was telling me that it was Hannah. There was nowhere to hide in the bathroom. My gut was telling me that I was going to get caught. I heard the footsteps going into Lily's room. I heard the closet door open quietly, then nothing for a moment. The silence was so loud, my heartbeat was making me want to pop my ears. Then I heard the footsteps leave Lily's room and head back down to where they came from. To say I was relieved is not even close. As I started to resume my escape, I saw a prescription bottle through a little opening in one of the bathroom doors. I took it without looking, hoping it was something I could enjoy. I hopped out and briskly walked back home. When I finally got into my room, I emptied my pockets. I had Charles's credit card and I swiped a prescription bottle for Hannah. The medication was Prozac. I thought, well, at least Charles is going to have some wild nights.
Man, that's so messed up.
Yeah.
Because I take an antidepressant. I take Lexapro. And if you don't take it for like a couple, maybe even like 2 days, you start having like brain zaps.
Yeah.
It's not like you just like are like, yeah, let's go get drunk. Like you actually like have like brain zaps. Like your brain like...
Well, because you're going off of a drug that you need.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm like... Stealing Prozac would be not like a drug that you would steal. Like, it's not like a fun drug.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not like like a recreational drug.
Yeah.
Like, it, first of all, it takes like 8 weeks to start working. So it's like you swipe one bottle, that's not going to do anything.
Well, she just took a bottle. She didn't even know what was in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm starting to think she's not that good of a lady.
No, she's not. I thought you thought she was this whole
kidding.
Time. Oh, I got you. Oh, silly. I thought when I was reading this, I was like, I bet Edie would hang out with this person.
What? No, I wouldn't. Just because I said that if I ever died, I would haunt the uglies.
Yes,
and
yes,
yes. And I would be
yes.
like,
Zatarain. Zatarain.
Yeah. Zatarain, crazy rats. Get it, because it's crazy, because it didn't take its Prozac. Okay, that's it. Broken Spirits, Part 5.
Look, you're probably hating me by now, and you have complete right to. I was a mess of a person. I was wrong for everything that I'm about to reveal. I don't know why I'm doing this now. Maybe it's because, well, I'm a single mom with a 4-year-old, and, well, the worst thing about deciding to haunt someone, the memories tend to haunt back. I know you want to hear about how karma gets me. That thought is creeping into your mind as I tell more of my story. Whatever, let's keep going. I kept having my sporadic visits with Lily. On the nights I wasn't visiting her, I was still watching the house. I had trouble sleeping if the lights were on at her house, and because of what I did. Well, some of the lights stayed on longer than usual as my little plan really took off. And just like the Brian plan, I just needed two moves. The first, the day after I took Charles' credit card, I bought flowers. That night, I snuck in and dropped the receipt in the kitchen in a perfect spot. It had to be easy to spot, but feel like it wasn't meant to be found. I didn't visit Lily that night. I actually felt that that would have been a punk move. I was trying to wreck her parents' marriage, and then I was going to sing to her a lullaby? I got over that feeling pretty quickly, though. Hannah was starting to look worse for wear at her brunches with Candace, And Candace played right into Hannah's paranoia. I could hear Candace, "Men are only as loyal as their belt loops." I don't even know what that means. But it affected Hannah. She was having more than her usual 1.5 mimosas. When the workday was over, I would see Charles take a little longer walking up the driveway each day. I can't imagine the conversations happening in the house, but I know that Hannah not having her Prozac wasn't helping. Can I just take a second and say how crazy it is that a loving wife would take advice from a stranger she just met over talking to her husband? Charles deserved better. I will say one more thing about them. Lily never seemed to be affected. Every time I visited, she was still the same sweet little girl. She still repeated what I taught her. I kept up the haunting charades. I don't know what that did, but it became a force of habit. The next week, the living room light was on, the latest I had ever seen it. I couldn't visit Lily that week. That's when I started to feel what I now know was remorse. At the time, though, I just thought I was angry at Charles and Hannah. But on Wednesday of that week, Charles came into the wrench alone. He looked so tired, but he still kept a smile with everyone. It was like he didn't want to burden the world with his worry. Everyone asked him where his wife was. "Oh, she stayed home with a kid. We think our house is haunted. Do you guys happen to know if our neighborhood was built on some burnt down orphanage or Indian burial site?" Mike, the bartender, said something really funny. "All of America's one big Indian burial site. That's why we're a doomed country." The poker guys pulled a chair up for Charles. He sat down and they dealt him in. After a few hands, he commented, "It feels like you guys are letting me win. Come on, I want a challenge." Then one of the regulars said, "Then you'll be needing to play a hand with her." And he pointed at me. Charles looked at me. "Come on then, give me a challenge." I sat down. The table cleared, so it was just Charles and I. He introduced himself. "Hi, I'm Charles." I responded, "I'm Jackie Kastner." Mike gave me a perplexed look, but then shrugged it off. "Well, Jackie, do you want a deal or me?" "I'll deal." We played 5 hands. I beat him every single time. Charles said, "Wow, you really weren't even going to pretend to let me win." I answered, "It's too addicting breaking someone's spirit." "Haha. Well, let's say you lifted mine tonight. Thank you, Jackie. I needed that." And I answered, "It was a thrill beating you." Then Charles said, "Well, now I feel like I owe you something in exchange." This took me back. Was this man who I thought was a good husband about to proposition me? And would I be evil enough to take him up on that offer? Where would we even? He interrupted. "Mike, can I get the check and add Jackie's drinks on there too? My payment for playing such a pro." And with that, he got up from the table, still the good man that he was when he entered the bar. I said, "Oh, no, you don't have to, I don't deserve that." Charles answered, "Don't be silly, the drinks are cheap here. It's really no big deal." Mike told Charles, $36 total, boss." Charles went, "Whoa, breaking my bank." He pulled out a 50 and headed towards the door. He stopped right as he was about to step in and asked loudly, with a little hint of humor, "Anyone know where I can get some Prozac quickly?" Then he giggled to himself and walked out. This is when I realized that feeling I felt before was remorse. After that night, I stopped visiting Lily for longer than I ever had. I'll add that I never haunted their house again. I wanted to put back the pills I took, but it didn't matter. That following Sunday, everything exploded. Hannah met up with Candace for bottomless mimosas. Now I was full on spying on her. She was a mess. She kept saying how it was her fault that Charles would ever step out of the marriage. The pills affected her in ways that she just knew hurt their marriage. Candace just soaked it up. She wasn't ever great support, just a great supporting character. This day they stayed beyond the bottomless and bled right into regular drinking. I began to question myself. I was taking out my weird pain on other people for some reason instead of dealing with myself. I don't know if it was even good to hurt Brian the way I did. Two wrongs don't make a right, right? I thought to myself, only to hear it coming from Hannah's mouth not even a second later, with no contest. Hannah said to Candace, "Two wrongs don't make a right, right?" Candace questioned, "Wait, Hans, what do you mean?" Hannah slurred, "Nothing." I got up to leave. I couldn't watch this anymore. But I would have to get a close-up view because as I stood up, I heard Candace say, "Oh my God, is that Tiffany Kavanaugh? I haven't seen you since high school. Come sit. You must meet Hannah." Hannah actually perked up for a moment. Her attitude shifted, reminded me of how Charles was able to keep a smile at the bar. Maybe they were perfect for each other after all. At first, I was grateful that Candace decided to take the reins of the conversation. So, Tiffany and I went to all the schools together, elementary, middle, high school. She was the girl every popular girl secretly envied. She was like too cool for everything. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I had prided myself on not standing out, and in doing that, I stood out. I interrupted, "Oh, it was okay." Candace knew everyone. She really had all the friends. Candace continued, "Stop, Tiff." We all secretly admired her, especially after she worked her magic on this guy named Brian Kindler. Now I really couldn't believe what I was hearing. I asked, "What are you talking about, Candace?" She continued, "Don't be so humble, Tiffany. Brian was the biggest bully any of us knew. He was mean to everyone for all of our school career. Then Tiffany decided to start a rumor that absolutely ruined him, and I helped." I was perplexed. "Candace, I think the bottomless mimosas are changing your memories." Candace didn't even take a breath. Everyone thought that Brian was gay. Tiff wrote a fake note from a secret lover, and she purposely dropped it near my locker. I thought it was like a cheat sheet or something, but when I opened the letter and read it, well, I was smart enough to know what she was hatching, so I ran with it. I showed everyone the note. It was like we unleashed the monster. Everyone turned on this guy. Hannah interrupted, "Wait, you ruined a kid's life?" Candace didn't even flinch. "He deserved it, Hans. He drove a girl to suicide in middle school, okay? And I found out that he did the same. The world is probably better off." Hannah looked at both of us confused on how to react. Candace continued, "I'll tell you the best part. Tiffany here was notorious for not signing anyone's yearbook ever, but she signed mine, and you'll never guess what she wrote in it. She flipped to the page where this bully should have been and wrote R.I.P. Brian." At this point, both Hannah and my mouths dropped, for different reasons, obviously. Noticing she didn't get the reaction she anticipated, Candace shouted to the waiter, "We're gonna need some more drinks. I'm sure crazy things happen at your high school, Hans." As if things couldn't get worse, Charles pulled up into the parking lot right at that moment. "When it rains, it pours." Charles said, "Hannah, baby, why aren't you answering your phone?" Hannah replied, "Duh, because I don't want to talk to you. I'm here drinking with my friends." Charles looked at me and pulled a dumb move that many men have either innocently or stupidly pulled. He greeted me, "Hey, Jackie." With that, both Hannah and Candace turned their gaze at me. Hannah spoke first. "I thought your name was Tiffany. Wait, Charles, how do you know this girl?" Charles bumbled, I don't know her. She goes to that bar that we like. She's a great poker player." Hannah interrupted, "Say more. Keep saying more, Charles. You know her. Is this the girl that you bought flowers for?" Charles, looking deflated, "Honey, I didn't buy flowers for anyone." Hannah answered, "Definitely not for me." Charles began tripping over words. "Hannah, honey, please. Not here, okay? You've been drinking." "My drinking isn't the issue. You cheating on me with this life ruiner is." Now, can I stop to note that this is the longest I've ever seen Candace not say a word? I excused myself from the table. I didn't even look back. I think I heard Hannah shouting for me. I should have. I should have gone back. I should have clarified everything. I should have admitted everything. I didn't. I ran off like a coward. The worst part? I saw Lily in Charles's car, and she waved at me.
Okay. Why did she wave?
She recognizes her. She knows her as Belinda.
Oh, okay. I'm getting confused with the names.
Okay. So the girl, we never found out the antagonist's name. Her name's Tiffany.
Right.
She told Charles her name was Jackie, which is the name of the girl that...
Right. Obviously. Okay, so she started the rumor that the Jew is gay, which is really messed up.
Yes.
Then he commits suicide. Yes. Okay. And then this girl is like, "Actually, I helped," or whatever.
Candace
from
said,
that, right?
"I helped." Okay. I was the one that knew it all.
Okay. I understand that part. But then she's like, "Okay, well, you signed my yearbook. It was so great, right?"
Mm-hmm.
But did she?
Yeah, she said she just didn't remember it. If you remember earlier in the story, she's like, one person I signed, I don't remember who it was, and I put R.I.P. Brian.
Oh, no. Okay, so this girl's actually, like, kind of problematic as well.
Candace is very problematic.
I bet you, it's just the one, I knew she was problematic because she said she had 1.5 mimosas only. It's like, if you're going to brunch, just bottomless mimosas, and you know your husband's going to pick you up, and his name's Charles, obviously he's really responsible because his name's Charles. So, if he's going to come pick you up, it's like... have more than one bottomless mimosa.
Well, that's what happened. She started drinking more, Hannah.
She said she had two or something like that.
Yeah, I can't
trust anyone who only has two bottomless mimosas.
Oh, no.
Two? Like, you know, like, they have to buy like a meal with that.
I don't know. I don't know any of this.
Oh, you would know if you
worked at
bottomless mimosas.
Oh, I got you. Drank bottomless mimosas.
Okay.
So
cool.
Yeah, so this is all blowing up. Everybody is.
People are gonna find out she's doing the B&E.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, let's keep going. We are on to the last part of this very creepy story. before we get to that, we have some announcements. I wanted to say a very happy birthday to T. Grilla, who is 40 years old. He sent us a comment on the Facebook group saying it was his birthday, and... We missed it.
November 9th. Happy belated birthday.
You didn't have to tell him how long ago it was.
Happy belated birthday, T. Grilla.
Happy belated.
Celebrate it again.
Celebrate your birthday one more time with
us.
Celebrate your birthday one more time with us.
With us.
Good job. Besides that, don't forget to join the Facebook group, the Instagram, and the website, All the True Scary Stories with Edie and Nick, and share your scary encounter with us. Is it true? We'll just take your word for it.
Yes. Hey, there you go. That's good.
All right. We're very trusting people. All right, Nick, do you have any announcement?
I have some shows coming up. I will be with Alfred Robles next week in Bellflower. And then I have a Santa Monica gig coming up, a Burbank gig coming up. And just some more ships, but they're shorter, thankfully. I'm taking more shorter ships. And then I'm trying my best to get out there, guys. I'm going to do my best to get out in the clubs and bring Edie along with me.
I'm taking a small break, but yes, I will go with you. I will follow you.
Follow you.
Follow you wherever you will go.
You will go.
Besides that, I just did a podcast. One of our uglies had me on their podcast.
Fun.
While I was at my sister's house. So this is what it's called. Oop, that's not it. All right.
Oh, man.
I have it. Don't stop the tape. Don't stop the tape because I have it. It is. Hey, who is this? Okay, that's not it. I'll tell you guys at the end of the podcast. I do have it. And I said some really smart stuff on this.
Good.
Yeah.
So you really want people to hear it.
Yeah, I said some very smart things about... Oh, okay. I found it. Okay.
Good. What is it?
It is called...
Okay, go ahead.
The Not Normal Podcast.
Whoa, man. That was hard to remember.
Okay. Well, you know, I was a not normal guest.
Yes.
We talk about everything from aliens to octopus being aliens that crash landed here on a meteor.
That's funny. To my octopus teacher.
To my octopus teacher.
To Dr. Octopus.
Yeah. To Doc Ock is a big part of it. So check it out if you want to hear me say some smart stuff. Because I said some smart stuff, I think.
There you go.
All right. I got more smart stuff to say, but let's get to the last part of this podcast, and then I'll say more smart stuff that I know. All right, so this last part is part 6, and it's called Broken Spirits.
I don't know if I'm alone on this, but the older I get, the more I realize I never knew who told me prayers work in the first place. After what felt like a bottomless disaster, I drove home and waited by the window. Maybe 20 minutes later, Charles, Hannah, and Lily finally got back home. Hannah jumped out of the car without waiting for it to be put in park. Charles got out and picked up Lily. Lily was crying. I hate that I got what I wanted. I broke their spirits, all of their spirits. The lights in the house went off like back when it was normal, but the energy around the house was different. I decided to put the pills back at least. It would be an easy in and out. I slowly opened the bathroom drawer, put them back, As I was turning to leave, I heard her voice. Hello? There was a sadness to it. I couldn't face her. I was a coward. I knew that now. I stood still until I felt like, hopefully, she would fall back asleep. A few minutes later, I heard her sing. At night our princess will come. She'll sing a pretty song. Her voice will warm the coldest of hearts who can't help but sing along. At night our princess will come. She'll sing a pretty song. She'll watch over us and keep us safe while she rights every wrong. I'm no princess. I left as quickly as I could. Even made some noise as I went out. I ran back to my house and got in just in time to see the hallway light turn on. I prayed that everything would go back to how it was. I prayed that Hannah would take her pills and realize that everything was a big misunderstanding. I prayed that the family across the street will find the happiness they had back in April. I prayed that Lily's princess will come. The next day, her grandma showed up and took Lily. The next week, Hannah came out of the house with packed bags. The following Wednesday, Charles was at the wrench, even before the regulars. His head was down on the counter, and his heart was on the floor. I walked in, saw him, and tried to walk back out. Mike, the bartender, said, "What up, Tiff or Jackie?" Charles lifted his head. He looked like he had aged 20 years. He opened his mouth. I anticipated him giving me hell. He just took another swig of his drink. I sat across the bar, trying to detach. Mike came up to me with a drink. "From Charles." Charles lifted his drink in the air and silent toasted to nothing. I felt like the brave thing to do would be to go get my lashings. So I got up and sat next to him. He looked at me and said, "She left me. Found someone else before she left. Before she started taking her meds again. She cried to me. She said her thoughts, told her revenge was the only way to fix it, but there wasn't anything to fix, except for a stupid false credit card charge. Revenge is... two wrongs don't make a right. She's gone, I'm alone. So I guess it sucks being in the right. I don't know. Probably the ghosts in the house or Belinda. Lily thought you were her, isn't that crazy? I just wanted Lily to grow up a healthy girl. But I can't help. She seems different." Mike interjected, "She's gonna grow up great, Charles. With you as her dad, she'll grow up just fine." This was the only time I saw a hint of a smile on Charles that night. It disappeared just as quick as it came. He downed his last drink and said, "I'm gonna pay for everyone's drinks right now, on me." Mike said, "You don't have to do that, buddy." Charles said, "I wouldn't have it any other way." Then he took out $125. "This should handle it." Mike reluctantly took the money. "Hey, Tiff, drive him home, would you?" Well, seeing as I didn't even taste the drink he bought me, I obliged. I carried Charles into his car. The only thing he said, "But how are you gonna get home?" I answered, "I'll manage." The drive was quiet. Charles just looked out the window up into the night sky. I didn't even attempt to talk to him. When we got to his house, I walked over to his side of the car to help him out. He stopped me. "I'm just gonna sit here for a minute. I promise not to drive off. I just don't wanna go in just yet. The house is haunted. You can go if you want. I'm just gonna sit here for a minute." I handed him his keys and I began walking away. I didn't immediately walk to my house. I took a walk around the block. I looked up at the night sky. By the time I looped back around to my house, I saw that Charles's car was empty. I took a deep breath to try to dissipate the anxiety that was bottled up in me. As I walked into my house, I told myself, I need to fix my life. I looked over at Charles's house. It was completely dark. I hoped that Charles was able to get sleep. I needed to change. I needed to grow. I needed to... My thoughts were interrupted by a bright flash and a loud bang coming from the house across the street. None of my thoughts mattered anymore. Charles's body was found the next day in the kitchen. A month later, a for sale sign went up. A few months later, a new family moved in. A year later, I would move out on my own. I would only come home every now and then, always sporadically, never staying longer than my parents wanted me to. A few years later, I would find a man that I thought was the love of my life. We would have a beautiful daughter. I became a pre-K teacher. Turns out I was good at speaking with children. Then my father passed away from health problems. Grief hit me hard. It tore a hole in my life. Then my mother passed away. People would say I was never the same, but they didn't know I was always a broken spirit. The love of my life would end up leaving me as I moved back into my childhood home. As for the house across from me, it never stayed occupied too long. Everyone who left claimed it felt haunted. Little did they know, so was my house. It was haunted by me and who I had been and what I had done. Now, for those of you wanting me to get my comeuppance, for those of you wanting me to get my karma, here you go. My baby girl, who will be 5 next week, 2 nights ago, as I was putting her to bed, I told her to just close her eyes. She replied with, "And when I feel like opening them, close them a little longer." I haven't said these words to her ever. And today, well, today she tells me she has an imaginary friend. Her name is Lily. I swear, it's like these houses were made to be broken into.
Oh, right. So is Lily a ghost, or is Lily like a regular person breaking into her house now?
I think Lily's a regular person breaking her house now.
Oh, my gosh. The B&E continues. They should just open a B&E instead of a breakfast and... What is it called?
A breakfast in bed, E&E.
What is it called when you go to like a
breakfast in bed? A bed and breakfast?
Bed and breakfast, yes. Okay. That's what it is.
Bed and breakfast.
Instead of
there
having
go.
All these B&Es, they should just do a
B&B.
Bed and
breakfast. That's
B&B,
what it is.
That's
yeah.
what it's
there you
called.
Go. There okay, you okay. go.
All right, so now Lily's breaking in.
What
do you think Lily's going to do when she sees who's living in that house now? She sees a picture or something of the ghost she thought was a ghost that is now living in that house.
I mean, do you think maybe she's breaking in because she knows she's getting her revenge?
You think?
Maybe.
Or do you think it's just like some kind of weird like thing about the house where the house like kind of manipulates people to do that?
I don't know. That's a good question.
The first girl sounds like she knew it was very wrong and she was doing it anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it's like the house or like the pull of the house that does it. Kind of like The Watchers, that show.
Yeah.
That the house is pulling these people to keep coming.
Well, these are two different houses, so it's.
Oh, I thought you said she moved back
into her childhood home. Lily and them lived.
Okay,
in the
so
house
this is
the
about
street.
Revenge, then.
Yes.
Okay.
I think this is what
you
is
creep
happening.
Me out. I'm gonna creep your kid out.
Yes, I found out you were a real person. I found out that you did this to me, kind of thing. I think that's
what
it is.
Well, that's the karma. Yeah, I guess that is the karma. And then also, I didn't expect, because the guy paid for all the drinks of the house, which was only $125.
Yeah.
That was the shocker for the story for me. I was like, $125 for everybody's drinks?
I mean, so...
How many people were there? Like 4?
I don't know. Maybe. It's a dive bar. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, a dive bar.
And it
was
a dive bar like...
The kind that serves
chili? I think this is the past, like at least in the 2000s.
Okay.
This isn't like 2022.
Okay.
It is. Now Lily breaking the house is older.
Yeah. Okay. And then also this guy loses his life. And then the girl is just like, whatever, I'm going to be drinking 2 mimosas every day.
No, she left.
I know she left. That's what I'm saying. She was just like, whatever.
I mean, I'm sure Hannah didn't update them on what happened after moving out. So I don't know. I mean, who would go back and tell the town that caused all the problems? By the way, this is what I'm doing now. She probably just left.
Oh, people would do that.
She probably just left.
They try to sell them those pyramid scheme things. Like, hey, you should drink this shake or whatever.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
What are those things called?
The shake, the Herbalife.
That's what it is, Herbalife.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's sad for the dude. He really did nothing wrong. Charles did really nothing wrong.
He did nothing wrong.
Which is a very Charles thing to do.
Yes, he was just being Charles.
Yeah, Charles in charge.
That's it, just being Charles in charge.
Charles in charge of everything bad that everybody gets away with except for Charles.
Yeah.
But why would he leave Lily?
No, they took her away. I don't know.
Right,
I mean, look, our antagonist, our narrator of the story, obviously doesn't have all the details. So I'm guessing Hannah left said, I'm moving out, taking Lily, and this just broke Charles to the point where it's like, I'm done.
Yeah, but still, like, he could still see her and stuff. It was like...
You're right.
I guess he was drunk.
He could have been stronger.
When you're drunk, it's like... And that makes sense why he spent, like, all that money, because he's like, I'm not going to need it.
Yeah.
Because I already have a plan or whatever.
Yeah.
So what's the creepiest part of the story? And it also reminded me of many stories that were... we watched that story about somebody living in the walls or whatever.
Which... Oh, yeah.
There's like a million stories
There's
about
tons
people
of those.
Living in the walls.
People living in the walls.
You can't even trust the walls anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it kind of reminded me of that. But...
I mean, yeah, people sneak into people's houses, definitely.
Yeah. And talk to your kids about nothing.
And talk to your kids about... No, that's scary. I mean, that...
I wonder if that's ever happened to me or you or
oh,
any of
man,
us.
I hope
or people
not.
Listening, like, you thought you had a dream or something, but it was really someone creeping around your house.
Yeah, you thought you had an imaginary friend, but it was somebody that was actually there.
Yeah. Somebody creeping around your house at night. Ooh, or looking in the window or something.
That's
or talking to you through the wall.
That's one of those things that, you know, is always like, you know, when you sleep, you have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
Maybe that's
especially when you're a kid, you sleep so hard.
Yeah, that's the creepiest part, I think.
I used to fall asleep, like, everywhere. Like,
yeah.
In the bathtub, like, now I can never sleep, but I used to, like, fall asleep, like, in the
kitchen. Have you tried the bathtub recently?
No, I haven't.
You should.
Now I'm, like, freaked out. I'm thinking, like, are all those times I, like, had nightmares or, like, thought I saw something, was it real?
It could be.
Okay.
Could people sneak in your house pretty easily?
Probably.
Oh, man.
Probably. All right, I'm going to say one more smart thing.
That's why you got to get a little dog.
Yeah.
And they go...
Yeah, because big dogs, when they see people breaking, they're like...
Oh, hey, Finn, you're a friend to me.
Hello, you know my owner.
Yay.
I like you. Well, little dogs, even if it's like somebody they've met before,
yeah, like
somebody who lives in that
short-term memory. I don't
get out of here! Get out of here! I'm like a goldfish.
Yeah.
Which I actually learned that's a myth, that the goldfish have short-term memory. They don't.
Yeah. No, they remember everything.
They remember too much.
Which is why people flush them down the toilet.
And I remember.
It's when the goldfish says, "I know all your secrets." I mean, the goldfish died, honey.
Okay, this is the smart thing I was going to say that I forgot to say on the podcast because I was talking about shadow people and stuff like that.
Oh, okay, all right.
And this dude was like, on the podcast, he's like, why do you think most people see shadow people? Because he was like, I've seen shadow people and it seems like you guys talk about them a lot. And that seems like one of the more common experiences, right?
Uh-huh.
And I was saying something about like how they are probably just more visible to us in our dimension, or they have more power.
Yeah. That would say
but
that.
Then I really started thinking about
okay,
it.
Okay, okay,
I really started getting in a downward spiral about this.
Okay.
So I remember hearing that humans use like 0.36% of their sight. Like they can only see, like absorb like that.
Yeah, we don't see the full
light
colors
frequency,
and stuff that are out there.
Light frequency. So it's less than 1%, right?
It's very low.
So we see less than 1% of things.
Mm-hmm.
And even our hearing is really bad compared to even, like, other animals on Earth.
Yeah.
Like dogs.
Mosquitoes. I don't even know how they would
like
test mosquitoes' hearing.
Maybe mosquitoes actually sound really good. Like, bazaar. Or maybe they are asking for permission. Can I take your blood?
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, so we absorb only 1% of things we can see, and like our hearing is not as good, is like the same, around the same. Even other animals have better sight and hearing than us, like birds do and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm wondering if there are shadow people and things like that, and all those guys everywhere, but because we can only see 1%, less than 1% of what's out there, we only see shadow people, because think about blind people, okay? People who are blind legally, right?
Okay.
They're not blind. Like I always thought blind people were like, you don't see nothing.
There's some that
it's
don't
like
see well.
You
yeah.
see shapes.
Yeah.
Or you see like light and dark, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see shapes, or you see things, but like they're hazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that sound like what we see when we see ghosts and things like that?
Yeah.
They are hazy. Like
you're onto something.
And then also like shadow people are probably not shadow people. They're probably eloquent, very detailed looking people, but because our eyes don't see less than 1% of the world, we see them as shadows, just like blind people see shadows, or they see outlines.
And we also see them at night, which doesn't help.
I think people see them during the day.
And sometimes during the day
in
the dark.
So I think that's why some of them throw on a little kicky hat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's why, like, when you see the Hat Man, it's like, oh, he was a Hat Man. Because it's like, they
like
know.
Like Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah, because they know. It's like, they can't, we don't see very well.
Mm.
But I'm sure they are detailed and they all look different. It's just that we only see shadows and hazy things, just like people who are blind, well, because we are blind.
Yeah, and we've read stories where people have said they could detail the shadow person. They were like, I could see that he was wearing a coat and he had a...
Which also might be why dogs can see spirits and things like that better, because they have like better ears and stuff and, that
sight.
We have.
Yeah.
And that might be why kids see them easier and stuff like that, because their hearing and their eyesight is better.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
See, that was some smart
Very
people.
Smart.
That was some... That
Man,
we,
you hit us right at the end with everything that we... If you guys want to go... hear all of her thoughts, go to the not so normal podcast.
I didn't say that on there. I didn't think about it till later.
This is a secondary podcast to the one she
did. To the not so normal. This is the kind of normal.
Kind of normal.
All right, Ugly. We love you so much. Don't forget to send us your story. Do it on the Facebook group, the Instagram, or the website, all at True Scary Stories with Edie and Nick. And besides that, please give us 5 stars after this. If you're not going to give us 5 stars, then just don't.
Don't.
Don't play with our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Besides that, we love you. We'll see you on the Facebook group and everywhere else. We love you. Bye.